Yeah, good. Thanks, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for joining me.
That's all right. And first thing, I've got to apologise. I'm in a shopping centre. As long as the sound's okay, and if you're happy with it, I thought if it's called chats, then maybe that's okay. But if the sound quality you don't think is great, then happy to rearrange.
No, I'm sure it's absolutely fine. I'm sure it's absolutely fine. So don't worry. Where are you?
At Bluewater. It's kind of it's a rare treat for me and the wife, because we've got four kids. So whenever the youngest is three, he's just gone into school. So whenever he goes in, we take the opportunity to do things we can't usually do. Have you got kids?
Yeah. We've got two boys, so not quite the four.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Whatever you got, enough. When it's more than one, it's enough.
Oh my word, you've got your hands full.
Yes, mate. Yeah, very, very good. So how's the podcast going?
Yeah, really good, really good. It's something I started probably maybe a couple of years ago, and then I stopped, and reigniting it with a different emphasis. So this is quite nice, and it fits in with what I'm interested in, which is about that startup journey and talking business and entrepreneurship and things like that. So for me, it's from a selfish perspective, yeah. It's really nice to network and meet other sort of like-minded people, maybe learn from them, share ideas and that's it really. I mean, there is other benefits, obviously building sort of a little bit of, for those who maybe dig a little bit deeper, they might see that I'm starting my own startup. So it's part of my own pre-launch marketing strategy to start really talking about the elements that I'm currently going through. So I'm currently in that pre-launch phase, and about strategies around what people do or don't do. And, often lots of business people don't think about that as a strategic step before they launch. Often, a lot of businesses just launch and go, okay, now I need to go find some customers. So I think I'm trying to sort of share with people, maybe start thinking about that pre-launch phase, getting a bit of anticipation around maybe your product or service before you actually take it to market. And that can go as far as just like simple, branding, who is your ideal audience? Who's your ideal customer? Why, what's your ambitions and getting all those sort of really important foundations right before you go and launch. I think to some extent it probably is relevant for any business, but I think certainly more so for online businesses now. When there's so much competition about how people differentiate themselves, where traditional businesses have probably approached it differently. For example, if you're a dentist, you go to dentistry school, become a dentist, and then you just open a dentist practice, and then you go, okay, well, now I need to advertise. There is, but even to that extent, I think there is things people can do within traditional businesses where they need to think about strategy before they launch. And I think really that's where I'm sort of coming at and bouncing ideas really and seeing what other people are doing. And again, like I said, from a selfish perspective, see if, there's ideas I can gather from others, because I think we're on a constant journey of sharing and learning and networking and trying to help each other. So that's, I'm very much about that as well. So yeah, that's where I'm coming from. But I was going to say, usually I do an intro and things like that, so we've sort of dived straight into it. I like to leave with the sort of chats actually quite informal. Like you said, it's very much a chat. So sometimes I don't even do a proper intro. So you have to excuse any other podcast that you just sort of listen to, and we just dive straight into it. But I think it's almost like I want it for people to almost be a fly on the wall in a conversation that maybe some people are having, and not scripted, not too planned, and not too polished, because I think sometimes that's where the most authentic conversations happen.
Oh yeah, there's another podcast I do called The Business of Property, and it's exactly that. It's just, we just chat on it, we just hit record and we just start talking about what we're doing and that sort of stuff. The only other thing I'd say, what I might do at some stage is just switch my video off, just because the bandwidth's not looking so hot And I don't want to ruin it. So I might switch that off at some stage just to make sure we're still in sync.
Yeah, that's fine. No worries at all. Yeah, that's cool. Well, listen, let's just dive straight into it because I think it'd be really fascinating to sort of learn a bit more about you. And, you know, I've read that you came from a bit of the corporate world and then you sort of decided you want to leave that with all your four kids in tow. You wanted to, you sort of sold your house and decided I want to take a different direction in my life. And you've got your own podcast and you're also a property investor. So yeah, tell me more. That'd be great.
Yes. So yeah, you're absolutely right. At the time that I quit my job, I had three kids and a pregnant wife. So we didn't have the four at the time. So we had three kids and a pregnant wife. So you can imagine having children yourself when you're speaking with a pregnant partner, when you're going to have a difficult conversation, you can imagine the nervousness I felt when I said to my wife, "Do you know what? I really think I want to leave work, which at the time was a six-figure plus salary, and sell our house and start a property business." I'm very fortunate. I'm a very, very understanding wife, so she was quite amenable to that, and she saw that we were struggling. And one of the key drivers of that decision was the itself. Although I enjoyed the people I worked with and to a large extent what I did, I was leaving the house at 5:30 in the morning. I was getting back at 8:00 at night. So I wasn't seeing the kids and obviously wasn't seeing my wife as much. So she understood the reasons for doing it. Her understanding dissipated when we moved out of a nice, you know, 4-bedroom, 2-ensuite new build property to a very dilapidated 2-bedroom cottage in the country, which didn't have central heating, and God bless the people that were in there before, they hadn't decorated it since 1973, and that was confirmed by the newspapers that we found under the carpet. And you know, I've then pushed my wife and, you know, three kids into a bedroom, and so that was the beginning of the entrepreneurial journey. So you're absolutely right about that.
So just breaking that down, what was I was just going to say, what was the real motivation behind taking that leap of faith? Because I think that's really interesting to dive into it, because I think a lot of people are stuck in that corporate world, maybe have ideas of what they want to do, but are too afraid to take that step because of all the reasons that you just said. So what was the thing that really made you go, yeah, you know what, let's do
this? I have this conversation. Yeah, I have this conversation on my podcast as well, Executive Juice. And for me, the fear of not making that decision suddenly outweighs the fear of making that decision, if that makes sense. So it was either, okay, I'm now at a stage where I'm being offered a path towards senior vice presidency. So we're talking about senior management moving on. And to be honest, that didn't look particularly appealing in terms of my time was already limited and I was already experiencing the challenges of senior management in terms of you deal with a lot more crap, not less of it. And then put that up against what could happen if I do leave this? What are the downsides? And I thought about the downsides and I thought, well, if this doesn't work out, I've got a specific skill set. I'm fairly confident. I think I'll be able to go and get another job. Would it be at the same salary rate? I would hope so. So I kind of thought about it and I thought about the mitigated risk versus if I stay in this job, I know what I'm going to get for the next 20 years. And the other motivating factor for me, and having spoken with lots of other people around this, was just the element of control. And one of the things for me was just that there would always be someone that controlled something about my life. So even though I had elements of freedom, there was always someone that said, "Stuart, this will be your salary increase for this year or not, or this will be your bonus for this year." And I thought, you know, I want greater control over how much I earn. Of course, the irony is, you know, when you leave to start your own business, you're taking a lot less, a lot lower salary and you know, fewer bonuses, if any at all. But I knew that all of a sudden, you know, suddenly I had the power. It was in my gift, because with my business, I could then determine how hard I worked, how often I worked, and what the revenue could be. So hopefully that sort of gives some sort of indication of where I was coming from at that time.
Yeah, no, definitely. And just out of interest, what was the sector or industry you were in?
So data stroke marketing, so consumer marketing, basically. So collecting retailer data and understanding customers. So worked with a lot of big retailers, all of the big grocers that you'd know and love, Tesco, the Marks and Spencers, Waitrose, and helping them understand their data. So it's something that I'm still interested in. I love analytics, and you know, the data side of business is something I really like and get into myself. But like I say, it's the elements of control that I think some of us want back in our lives.
Yeah, no, you know what, I completely concur. And I think what's a really interesting point for people to consider who may be, you know, trying to balance, you know, either actually taking the plunge, or maybe they're still working full time and got a side hustle and they haven't fully committed to it, which is always going to hold them back if they don't fully commit. And I think your point of, well, if it doesn't work out, you know, I'm still very capable and I can still go back into the employed world and get a job. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, you've got to mitigate your risk. But I think sometimes unless you commit fully, it will never happen properly. Or not to the extent that you hope it to.
Yeah. And I think that's another factor, is that a lot of us, and myself included, I think we wait for this right moment, this right time, where, I don't know, we're going to wake up and there'll be a burning bush outside, or there'll be a sign, and we're, you know, there'll be a slug trail on the pavement outside that says, now is the time to do it. It doesn't happen. You know, there isn't nothing. It's the time is now. And, you know, that for me is something, you know, that really started to, you know, assimilate into me, which was, if I want to do something, why do I wait for tomorrow? And with young children, you know, there's always going to be an excuse. I'm too young, I'm too old, I'm too busy, I've got kids, I haven't got kids, I want to make a plan. There'll always be something, is my experience. There'll always be something to put it off. And if we can mitigate the downside and think about what's, you know, and plan for it. The other thing that, having spoken with a lot of people about this, is the other thing, there is no magic to it. There isn't a magic formula that's suddenly going to make everything possible. It's just really simple stuff. Like, do you know what? We had to cut the budget. I had to lose Sky Sports. Imagine that, not watching Premier League football on a weekend. And, you know, losing.
You know, if you want to make something happen, you have to make a sacrifice. You can't have your cake and eat so often. So, you know, you need to just sort of, you know, buckle down and actually commit to something, because ultimately, if you want it bad enough, you've got to be prepared to, you know, walk that path. And I think that's a really interesting point you made, actually. I remember before I had kids, one of my friends who's a few years older than me, a guy called Marcus Bell, lovely guy, great friend. And he was almost like an older brother figure. And he said, there will never, ever, ever be a perfect time to have children. So you just got to get on and do it. And I think that's the same with everything in life, whether it's business, whether it's having a family, whether it's anything. Just, there is no perfect time, perfect moment. If you want it, you just got to do it. And
yeah.
So Stuart, what was the sort of interest with property? Why did you pick that as a sector to focus on?
Yeah, I think in summary, we were accidental landlords. So my wife bought a property back in 2003, which we kept. My version of the story is that when we wanted to sell it to buy our own place, that she said to sell it and I said, no, let's keep it. I'm sure, you know, it'll benefit us in the long run. That's my version of events. Hers is different. But so we kept that property. And the first thing was, although that property cost us money even to hold on to, obviously over time it appreciated in value. So there was a lot of capital appreciation. In fact, we've just received an offer on it today, actually. So we're finally selling it after 17 years, and it's, you know, it's worth 2.5 times what we bought it for. And that we saw the benefit of that capital appreciation. I also, with my own property, had released some equity to go traveling, went for a long holiday with the kids to Australia. And we then looked at selling the property, and I suddenly realized that when property increases in value, obviously you benefit from that. And also there's another side to it, where if you're renting a property out, you do get cash flow. So I always had an interest in it, and I sort of dabbled, I guess. I bought a little flat down in the southwest, and then bought a multi-let property, and I suddenly started to see the benefits and thought, actually, there is a business here. We're about to hit sort of 4 years old, and I think that's where the interest comes. Just seeing that not only would you benefit from capital appreciation, as in the value of the property increasing, of course that's not always the case, but also you'd rent the property, so you're kind of getting two aspects to it if you were looking at it long term. And I think that's what really interested me, was just the many different aspects of it and the many different things you could do with property.
Yeah, no, 100%. And interestingly enough, that's one of my backgrounds. Both is I've got my mortgage brokerage and been in finance for a long time, and also been in property investment and development myself. So, yeah, we all have these little sort of, I guess, other aspects to our lives, and that's certainly one of mine. But I was introduced to it almost from a family perspective. You know, my family had always been involved with property from a young age, and you know, so that was sort of almost instilled in me, and it's always served me well. And I've always said to people, I think, you know, it's a cracking, you know, long-term investment. And you know, there are definitely moments in time where it does better than others, but I think if you can stick it out for the long term and be smart and look for the right opportunities, it's phenomenal. And it's real long-term wealth that you can, it's feasible to pass from one generation to the next, which again, you know, when you've got a family, that might be a consideration.
And something you said it three times, Ben, and I think it's really important that you said it, because not everyone said it. You talked about it being long-term. And I have to admit, when I started out, I honestly, you know, when we sold the property, I was thinking, you know, it wasn't kind of, you know, this time next year, Rodney will be millionaires. But I thought within a very short period of time, I would replace my six-figure income. Honestly, within 3-6 months, I look back on that and I just, you know, shake my head, because it's not like that. I know there are opportunities out there, but for me, it is very much long-term, and that's how I approach it now. And I think I underscore that word long-term when I talk to people, because I think there's a lot of, and if you've spent a lot of time in the property industry longer than I have, you know, you see a lot of the quick, get rich quick brigade. And
there's too many there are too many. And it's a real shame, because I think a lot of people have been hoodwinked, you know, property of all things. I'm of that view of it's long term. Don't get me wrong, there is definitely shorter term opportunities, and it depends, I guess, what area within property you want to focus on ultimately. If you want to be doing development, you know, that's obviously a lot you know, quicker turnarounds than if you want to be doing, you know, long term lets. So I think it just comes down to ultimately what type of investor, property investor, you want to be. And I think actually this is interesting, because actually it comes back to the whole pre-launch marketing strategy of, you know, what, and without again thinking about lots of technical things that you might do on a pre-launch strategy for an online business or an online brand, but more again on the practical side of, for, you know, a regular business, is what is your pre-launch strategy? It was actually figuring out who you are and what you want to be doing as a business, and not flip-flapping between different models and different ideas. You know, being clear on who you are as a company and your North Star. You know, we talk a lot about in marketing, you know, what is your guiding North Star? Because if you're not clear what that is, you can often find that you stray from the path, you know, and suddenly a new shiny thing's props, you know, crops up over here, and you go woohoo, and you chase after that, and then some other shiny thing goes over, and you chase after that. But I think if everyone's thinks about, you know, the core of what type of business they want to run, then it can keep them much more focused on, you know, on the right direction, and help them get there quicker ultimately without being distracted.
Yeah, and you see that a lot in property. I'm sure it happens in other sectors, but you see it a lot. If people talk about, in inverted commas, the strategy, is it going to be buy to let? Is it going to be a house of multiple occupation? Is it going to be service accommodation? And you're right, there are short-term opportunities like property flipping, but people have to know what they're doing. But you've put the cart before the horse if you focus on the business strategy, because like you're saying, in terms of pre-launch phase, what we really need to think about, what problem are we solving with the business? Like any other business, what problem are we solving? Which customer are we serving? And how are we going to serve them? And again, I got a little bit lost with that in the first year, and it took me a while to come back around to it and be really clear. So I very much focused on the student market. I'm now transitioning to the young professional market, but that's, for me, is a natural transition because we're serving the customer. Actually, once they graduate from university, what are they going to do? They're going to try and find somewhere to live. So that's the path we're following. But that was following your kind of what you've talked about in terms of pre-launch thinking around what is the business, what do we stand for, and who are we serving?
No, 100%. And I think that's fantastic that you're in that position now where you're much clearer. You know, like you touched on, I think when a lot of people start off on this path of, you know, investing in property, it's, yeah, unfortunately, I think it's just that, you know, quick buck, you know, what's the latest shiny thing, and not thinking about, you know, ultimately what sort of business they want to run. It's almost as though I think they want an easy life without actually realizing it's still hard work.
Yeah, and I, you know, I always include myself in it, because in the early days I felt the same until I realized just how hard it was. And I realized, of course, any business that's going to be successful, like it or not, it's going to be bloody hard work. It's going to take a lot of effort. There isn't a quick option. And when I say quick, I'm talking about 30 to 90 days, or you know, even, you know, 6 months. It's going to take time to build a successful business if that's what you're trying to do. For me, the learnings were important ones to get really early on to think about how we can build a business that will sustain us long term and, you know, sustain our customers long term.
Yeah, you know what? That's fantastic. I'm really, really, really excited for you, because I think now you're clear on your journey and your path, and that will just really, really help maintain that focus. So, I mean, that's phenomenal. So with that in mind, is it now a case for you just to sort of build out the portfolio and expand it further? How do you intend to do that? How do you intend to, I guess, market yourself and all those sort of things?
Yeah, so we had a moment, actually, and probably the first time I've talked about it publicly, but I had a moment back in March, just pre-lockdown. And one of the properties I had, so we've got a portfolio of it's around 40 rooms, 90%+ of which are student. And one of the properties, I'll be honest, I took it on, the letting agent said, Stuart, I've got 5 students, they want to move really quickly. And I thought, okay, that's brilliant. Let's get them in. And rather than do the development, which I would usually do, which is upgrade it to a high standard and put on suites in, and I thought, well, I'll give it what we call a buff and a fluff. So I'm just paint it, make it look nice, got the tenants in. And would you believe it, over time, because it was just an average property, it got treated averagely and started to fall into a little bit of, not disrepair, but just didn't look as great. And then because it didn't look as great, the tenant profile dropped a bit. And you know the story. Before we know it, I've then got a group of tenants in there that aren't great. They're not looking after the property. And I personally went to visit the property just before lockdown. And honestly, Ben, it was absolute tip. And they were told I was coming. They were told I was coming at least twice before I visited the property. And I've never got angry before with tenants, because I treat it like a business. And if it's not great, I'll walk out and I'll speak to the letting agent. Or if I'm speaking directly with the tenants, I'll be very professional. But honestly, the rubbish in the kitchen was knee deep. There was stuff all over the walls, which I assume was food. I hope it was food. And I just turned around to these tenants and I said, you know, what? Would you allow your mother to come into this place? And they all said no. And I said, so why would you let me come here? And I snapped and I realized what happened. And I did get quite angry. And anyway, the tenants were moving on. But what I realized was that I'd not met my own values and my own objectives within the business. And that property is now going to become the flagship of a new brand I'm calling Inspired Urban. And we're just midway through the project where we're totally refurbing it. Every room that can is getting an ensuite, and the one that can't is getting a private bathroom. I've got a local artist coming into the property. We've got Inspired Urban is about bringing the outside inside, and so we're really going to go to town on it and make it an inspiring place to be, not an uninspiring place to be. And I'm, you know, spending quite a lot of money on property I already own, but the whole objective is that when someone walks into that property, and I had this for the other properties I had, but this one will now lead it, is that I want people to, when they move into the property, invite their friends, because they're so enamored by the place they live that they want to other people to see it. And that's kind of how I see it. So that will now be the flagship for the future. I'm looking at another property at the moment, which I can't talk about because we're in negotiation, but it'll be a commercial building that we convert into HMOs. But again, I'll look for the same standard. You know, we'll have bare brick walls, it'll be foliage inside, it'll have all the amenities people want. And that is people talk about co-living, it will be kind of co-living, but I haven't really got there yet, but it would just be places that people want to live and spend time. And obviously, given what we've been through this year, that's going to be really important.
And, oh, that sounds fantastic. And again, it's great that you're really honing down on, you know, your business model, your, you know, the persona, the audience that you want to focus on and your offering. I think that's, you know, again, that's really important for any business in any industry, really honing down on what your clear offer is and honing down on the audience. Because clearly you don't want that last type of audience, you want a different type of audience, and to do that you need to do X, Y, and Z. And how do you intend to I guess position yourself, market yourself and things like that? It's interesting because we've actually just done a web project for something very similar to you. They're called Black Door Stays, and they have co-living, they have holiday lets, they have like a portfolio of different types of properties under this brand, Black Door Stays, dotted around the country. So we just launched that for them and to make them a bit more independent from some of the platforms that exist, so they're not solely relying on paid commission and et cetera to whoever it is that they use, whether it's booking.com, Airbnb or whatever. What's your sort of strategy around sort of, pushing that brand and attracting the right type of people?
It's a really good question. My objective will be around looking at local businesses. And it's something I've been doing a bit of research on, not much, but given that I've been working in the area for 5+ years, I've obviously got a few contacts that I'll be working with. But primarily the target audience will be, as we say, young professionals. And I'm then therefore looking at corporates. The way I want to develop the properties will be such that once I've completed this pilot, I'll be able to go out to corporates and say, if you need housing for staff, for whatever reasons, you know, we could create these types of properties for you. We could even brand them with your corporate brand, however that works. So one of my first approaches for this will be to reach out to the local business market. There is still a lot of employment. There's a lot of negativity in the market at the moment, and I appreciate there are a lot of bad things happening as regards employment, but then there's still a lot of business still happening. And where we are based in the Southeast, there is a lot of industry, and that will cover off young professionals as well as working professionals. They don't have to be necessarily what we'd call white collar workers. They could also just be workers. So that would be the first approach, is going out to corporates, starting to build relationships where they're looking for housing for their employees. And second will be the secondary market will be just open out to the market via the Spare Room, the Right Move, and really putting our name out there. But for me, it is about creating that consistent brand. And when people look at our properties, I want them to start thinking about inspired urban properties. And I've already started thinking about how we market them. It won't be going on to Spare Room saying, do you want a room? It will be, you know, how do you want to live? Not do you want a room? It's how do you want to live right now? What services do you need? And forgetting just the space. It's about the physical environment, but then about the environment that's created within the building, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think that just creates a nicer living and just a life experience, doesn't it? It's not, you know, I just don't want a bed. I want to have a great life, you know, and all of that goes around with it. I think that's really important. Do you find the corporates are sort of very open to sort of listening to people like yourself who have the capacity to help their employees, like a big corporate within their, maybe I'm guessing, HR department? Because I guess the great thing for you is that's a zero cost acquisition. So, you know, if they've got people that they can fill it, or, you know, effectively, then it's not technically, I'm guessing, I don't know if there is a monetization element for them, but I'm guessing it's not going to cost you anything to get, you know, people in through your doors. Whereas obviously a traditional letting agent or other platforms may take a percentage, I'm guessing.
Yeah, we haven't reached that point to have conversations with the businesses at the moment, Ben. We're still planning what we do. My view on that is that a lot of businesses, certainly those that are forward thinking now, are thinking about the holistic elements of their employees. So a lot of, again, forward-thinking businesses are thinking, you know, what services. So we look at any good businesses in the marketplace, now, and they're providing private health, they're providing access to gyms, they're providing other services, because they know, good businesses know, that you can't just look after the employee when they're under your roof. Actually, if we're thinking about mental health and well-being, what else are we looking after? So I'm hopeful that I'll be speaking with businesses that are more forward thinking like that, because the environments we provide will hopefully allow their employees to engage with others outside and be stimulated outside of the workspace. And that's how I see it, is if businesses are thinking like that, if they've got a broad perspective, then hopefully they'll understand that we can help them and help their employees outside of the workplace as well, and see that as an extension. That's the hope. In reality, we'll see what happens.
I think that's a great message, if I'm honest with you. And I think it's about positioning that message and getting it in front of that right audience. I think, you know, it's a phenomenal message. It's a zero cost for the HR team who are looking to take you on, effectively. And it's a win-win. That's the only way I can really sort of phrase that, I see. Here's staff intranet, or whatever you want to call it, and, you know, check out your healthcare, check out the local gyms that you're a member of, and, you know, here's some amazing accommodation. If you're looking to,
Like I should be outsourcing you for some business development, Ben. You sound like you got it.
it's what I do, unfortunately. My brain's constantly whizzing. it sounds really, really exciting, and I'm so pleased for you. So let's just touch on. Obviously that's a great sort of, I think, lead on to your other sort of area that you're involved with, which is your podcast. So tell me a bit more about that. Does the podcast lead from the property, or do you talk more sort of generically about your experiences?
The podcast, I love podcasting. I mean, I love doing the show with you, and it's a real pleasure to be able to sit on this side of the microphone, to be honest, and speak with you. And I'm very grateful that you've invited me onto the show. And the podcast, I'm going to be really honest, the podcast originally was developed so that I could speak with people that would be potential investors. That's why I created the podcast, because investors so far have been founders, business owners, people that have sold their businesses, have some cash, and they're looking to invest that for decent returns. That was the original thinking behind the podcast. By episode 4, I realized, and we launched the podcast back in May 2019. By episode sort of 4, I realized that I just really enjoyed connecting with people. You mentioned that as well. So I think there's a theme for us podcasters.
Creatures, I think.
Yeah, and what I love about it is that, you know, you can reach out to someone on LinkedIn or whichever platform you're on, and like we have, and then you get to meet people, real people, make real connections, and that's what's happened. I've interviewed close to 100 people now, and overall we've done close to 200 episodes. It's really what I've really focused on now is the personal development aspect. So it is about people that have started businesses, and it's that bit between leaving work and transitioning, which we talked about at the start of this episode. It's really meeting founders, and I've just loved the variety. We talked to a broad spectrum of people. I've spoken with people that have started pizza companies in Philadelphia, that have created big chains, people that have been on Dragon's Den and built shoe companies, a broad range. I mean, some of the people have come from really depraved and deprived backgrounds that have gone on to start businesses. So for me, what I love, and you talked about speaking with like-minded people, and for me, I love digging into that mindset and understanding what it is, because we've all got the same opportunity. Well, to a certain degree, I know some have fewer and some have more, but in terms of what we're capable of, we can all apply a mindset. And for me, after almost two years of this podcast, for me, that's where it begins and ends, is mindset, if we've got the right mindset approach. So I love speaking with people that have achieved, let's say, great things. And I don't just mean in the financial sense. I mean in the freedom sense, and just the fact that they've brought tangible things and greater wealth into the world, both financially and time-wise. And I love understanding how they've approached things. And so that's really the main ethos of the podcast, is to uncover that.
It sounds absolutely fascinating. And what did you, you came from a slight marketing background and data, you said. Do you find that was also a reason because you enjoyed the, you know, well, I guess it was, wasn't it? Because you were talking about you wanted to sort of put yourself out there and market yourself and try and attract investors. So I guess it was part of the marketing strategy behind that. Was there, did you find that succeeded in the way that you expected or hoped, or did you find it went off in a different direction?
Yeah, totally. It totally went off in a different direction. It became so much less about getting investors to actually what information can I get and what learnings can I develop. And almost it was like going to school. Every time I interview someone, it's like going to school. What can we learn? And some of the things that I think about now have come directly from people I've interviewed on Executive Juice. One guy, for example, Alan Weiss, he's in his 70s now, but he's written 64 books. He wrote a book called Millionaire Consulting, and a really popular book, probably in its like 10th publication or something. But he said some things which just really resonated, and being able to, and I've spoken to lots of people that have authored several books, multiple entrepreneurs. And so then for me, it became about learning, and I thought, well, okay, it's about me learning. Surely there's other people like me, and clearly there are, that are looking to develop themselves. And my belief is that we can, you know, we're always developing, and actually the only limit I've got is my level of mindset. And if I'm open to learning, then surely I can improve. And that's what it is. And we talked earlier on about doing things now. And that's, you know, one of the things that Alan said on his podcast with me was, you know, he just said a statement, if not now, when? And it really struck me as a key piece of advice. And the other thing on the podcasting for me, I had a lot of fear around it before I started it. I thought I'd really like to do podcasting, and then I suddenly felt a lot of fear. And for me, once again, that propelled me to doing it, because as soon as I felt that moment of pulling back from it, I knew I had to do it, because if I didn't, I'd regret not doing it. And of course, you know, once you start doing it, there is nothing to fear. And you know, it's enabled me to start connecting with people like yourself in the real world, because you just don't know where these connections are going to lead.
No, not at all. And from a business perspective, if we're brutally frank, there is people can earn money from podcasts. It's like anything. If you've got a big YouTube channel, you can earn money, ads and all the rest of it. Have you started to think about monetization for your own podcast or not? Or how do you, are you seeing that as a potential business within a business? Or are you just quite happy to chat and network? Because I know being in property can be a little bit lonely, because some, you know, you often, you know, you're not working in an office environment, for example. It's often, you know, just you and then your amazing builders or whoever. But it's a different type of business, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. If I said I hadn't thought about monetizing, I'd be lying. Absolutely have. I think unless you're Joe Rogan or one of the huge podcasters, it's going to, I accept that it's going to take time, and that's how I set about this podcast. So I said to myself, before I even consider whether or not I continue with the podcast, I'm going to do 100 interviews, because I knew that would stop me from pulling out early. And I'm really pleased I did, because I've seen it develop over time. For me, we do advertise on the podcast, but I'd say revenues are limited at best. Probably negligible is the right word. So it's not something that we'd make money from anytime now. For me, the next stage of Executive Juice is how we incorporate what we do. So I've already received contact from people that themselves are looking to start businesses. And that seems like a natural progression for Executive Juice, because what people are looking for is support. So I've actually started coaching. So I've now started coaching people that just want to make that next step from full-time employment into starting a business, purely because I've got the experience of it. So in terms of your point around the monetization, what I see it as is probably a bit more of an attraction, so people can, you know, tune into the podcast, obviously get some great advice from really good entrepreneurs and founders, but also get to hear me, understand that I'm a real person. I'm here, and hopefully see that there's some credibility in what I do. I'm very open about what goes on. And then, you know, if they want some support in just making those early steps, you know, I could potentially help with that as well. So that's where I think that's going. But you know, that is probably a year or so away from now, Ben, but given that you've asked the question, I thought I'd just be open. That's probably where I see it going.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Phenomenal. And I guess, you know, there's it's interesting, isn't it? You do something, you don't sometimes, you know, you have an idea where you want it to go. And I think this just goes back to the right of our very beginning of the conversation, just starts and things will happen. But often you have a perception of where you think it might go, or the initial intention, but often you'll start to, you know, see opportunities, or doors are open, and you sometimes will just walk through those doors and grab it. The opportunities are not always obvious either. So I think you've got to be very mindful of, you know, of everything. One thing I always like to do is actually just say yes, because I think the more times you say yes, more chance something amazing might happen. And if you constantly say no, then guess what? Not a lot's going to happen.
You know, and that's the other experience. And just as you were saying it, I was thinking, and that is another key learning for me in the last couple of years, is that if you don't take action, nothing will happen. And it kind of brings us full circle to back to the beginning where you asked about, you know, why I left the job. Because if I hadn't taken action, those other avenues wouldn't have opened up. If I didn't start a podcast, this coaching thing might have not even become apparent to me. And that's where I completely agree with you, is that taking action might lead us to a path where we'll go, do you know what? I'll never do that action ever again. I'll never follow this path. But that's a learning. And at least you're clear on it. However, my experience is that when you take these actions, you know, just the relationships that I've made through podcasting and through property were unexpected and probably gone in directions that I necessarily wouldn't have drawn up for myself. But I wouldn't have known that had I not taken that quite literal first step and taken the action. So I think that is an important thing. It's also good to be clear on what you won't do. That's the other thing, is that, you know, if there's something you're really clear on you won't do, then fine. But by being afraid and of the unknown and not taking action, for me, that's probably a reason just to take that action and see what comes out of it.
Yeah, no. I just think, you know, you've got one life. You've got to live it to the max and just go for it, because you never want to look back and have regrets. You know, you never want to be that person who goes, oh, what if, you know? It's just, oh, man, just do it. I think that's the thing, just do it. I mean, that's, you know, there's no more to be said, you know, than that, really. Listen, Stuart, let's wrap it up. That's been really amazing and insightful. Thank you so much for sharing that. That's been, you know, phenomenal. So, yeah, for all those listening, listen, guys, definitely go and check out Executive Juice. I'm guessing it's one of the usual sort of, you know, podcasts, platforms, Apple Podcasts and all the rest of it.
Yeah, we're everywhere, plus executivejuice.com.
Perfect. And obviously good luck, and, you know, keep pushing on that property business. I think that's, again, it's great that you've got a very clear focus. So yeah, huge congrats with that. And I think that's a great sort of example for other people who are doing more normal businesses, who aren't necessarily, you know, creating tech businesses, but, you know, are doing, and there's nothing wrong with normal businesses, by the way. I think normal businesses are the foundations of where we came from. So I think, you know, that's not to be underestimated, but importantly, I think, you know, thinking about these things as pre-launch phases, knowing, you know, like you're doing, Stuart, you know, being very clear on what you want to try and achieve and who you want to be and the type of business you want to run and the audience you want to appeal to. I think there's a lot of lessons that you just shared, which people will be able to benefit from. So thank you for sharing that.
Nice one. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate the time on your show.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Stuart, we'll take care. And listen, we'll definitely have to catch up another time soon.
Nice one. Cheers, Ben.
Brilliant. Stuart, I'm still here. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. I better let you get back to your wife and four kids. I'm sure you'll pull your hair out.
Yeah, thanks. So are you still involved in Mortgage Broken now?
My team are. I'm not. I've sort of made myself redundant. Not literally.
Nice. Well done.
I've got a normal team, and they're brilliant. So it's really enabled me to push on other fronts, which is great. Still, obviously, I'm very active within it and all the rest of it. But in terms of the advising and things like that, I don't get involved. But obviously, yeah. Yeah, you need to, you know, obviously need to hand, you know, get in touch. So yeah, no worries at all. But yeah, we've got a marketing agency now as well, and within that, we're working on a few tech projects, which is quite exciting.
So you still own the business, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, if you're interested, why don't we do a swap? Why don't you come on Executive Juice?
Yeah, perfect. I'll be delighted. I'll be honoured. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll respond to your confirmation email from last night, just with my calendar link. Yeah. Book it on. Be good to get you on the show, have a chat.
No, it'd be perfect. I'd be delighted. I'd be honoured. Thank you. That'd be great. And yeah, just sort of deeper into, you know, I guess what I'm up to. I haven't sat on the other side yet.
Yeah. have you not?
I'm quite happy, you know, just asking the questions.
Oh, good. Well, I'll be gentle. I promise.
Brilliant. All right. Well, Stuart, I'll let you crack on. Really, really, really nice.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
Appreciate it. And when I'm next up in is it? Where about, are you in London or in the sort of Essex, Kent area? Or
Sorry.
So yeah, next time I'm around, I always want to meet the people I chat to in real life or I connect with, because I think there's something also about actually meeting people. So I think if I'm around, I'll try and give you a shout and see if we can just hook up for a coffee or something.
Yeah, 100%. Be great.
Awesome. Well, you take care, mate.
All right, nice one. Cheers, Ben.
Cheers.
See ya. Ta-da.